Hello and welcome to the Ship Shape Podcast, a series of podcasts where we meet amazing people and talk about their experiences, personal, technical, and all related to the maritime world. Come and dive in, dive in.
Today on the Ship Shape Podcast, we have Taylor Francis. Taylor is the producer of Taylor's Travels, a YouTube channel that has over 200,000 subscribers. And we're going to get to hear her take on how she's become such a success. The host today is Meryl Shred. I'm a live aboard on a Toshing Toshiba 36 in Boston, Massachusetts, and Allie Wish.
I'm a former live aboard in Boston, Massachusetts, but currently coming to you from Paris, France, covering things from land and wishing I was on the water.
So, Taylor, where are you coming from? How's everything going?
Things are going really well. I'm actually coming in from Ontario, Canada, just spending some time at home visiting family and stuff during the hurricane season.
So when you come home after your travels, you got a ton of stories to tell everyone, huh?
Yeah, there's no shortage of stories and experiences. And sometimes it's hard too, because like, you don't want to seem like you're like talking about all these amazing things that you've done and like trying to sound like something you're not. But then at the same time, I'm like, wow, I have so many amazing stories to share. Like, I'm so excited to tell everyone about what's gone on this season.
So I guess we're going to get into it all, but you did van life. You've been doing boat life for some time. You know, when you first decided to live this eclectic lifestyle, what did your parents think of this?
So my parents have always been very, very supportive of me. Like when I bought the camper van, I was only 18 and drove across Canada in that on my own. And so my mom always calls me her little gypsy child. And so they've always been really good about that. And we have a very close relationship. So I'm always keeping in touch with them. They always know what I'm doing, where I'm going, and keeping an eye on me and making sure I'm safe.
And what's the first thing you do when you get back on land?
Tim Hortons. If I'm back in Canada, the first thing I do is grab a Tim Hortons coffee.
So, you know, you obviously, we'll start from the beginning. You grew up sailing, right, with your family, you know, but the idea of all of a sudden, you know, doing van life and going across the country, like what sparked that? You know, obviously there's some type of madness, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think just from a very young age, I've never really felt like society's normal standards really aligned with me. And, you know, in high school and stuff, it was a big push to like find out your career and pick an education and go to school. And I really had no desire to do any of that. And I knew that, and I was strong in that. I just had such a strong desire to travel because I grew up in such a small town, really hadn't been many places before, and just wanted to get out and see the world. And I'm terrified of debt, so I didn't want to start out my 20s in a bunch of school debt. And through kind of Instagram and stuff, the van life thing was starting to kind of ramp up. And there's a couple of different people that I follow. One in particular that was hugely inspirational for me was Brianna Media. She has an Instagram and does the van life thing in the desert. And I was just so blown away by that. Like seeing that back then when I was 17, it was like, wow, this is possible. Like people can live like this. And so bought the van and did that. But obviously at that time, social media was not my forte. I wasn't making any income doing that. And I just waitressed. I just did waitressing because I knew it was a great job that you could do basically anywhere in the world. Like everybody needs to eat food. You can waitress and it's decent enough money. And yeah, I was able to save up for the van and the motorcycle and my first boat all from just doing waitressing.
So you did all this type of stuff. Did you do any like traveling before the van? Like did you travel the world before, like where that
a little bit. So actually the first time I had ever left Canada, I was 14, traveled down to Belize because I have some family down there, And then I had just been on like little vacations to resorts in Mexico and stuff. And then my best friend and I decided to do this big trip to Thailand. And it was a month-long backpacking trip, but that was just hugely mind-opening to go to such a foreign place and have such a culture shock. And I think we both kind of definitely got the travel bug from that.
Was it like a long-distance trail that you were doing, or...?
We kind of went all over. So we flew into Bangkok, and then we mostly like did trains and buses and stuff to get around, but we wanted to see a lot of the country. And so, yeah, we would take trains and buses. We went up north to Chiang Mai, and then we went out to the islands like Koh Phangan, Koh Tao. And I feel like we got a very good view because we went to many different parts and areas of the country. It wasn't like we were just in one place. And you got to see some areas that were a bit more raw than others. And getting outside of just that tourist trap kind of thing and going off the beaten path and finding things out for yourself a little bit rather than doing it with like a tour or something, I think was what really kind of got us motivated to continue doing things like that.
Yeah, there's totally like a bubble. I feel like they can keep you in. You know, they'll show you what they want you to see. But when you get to things on your own terms, it totally changes.
Absolutely.
So a question I have is, when did things shift from, you know, waitressing and like just testing out the waters, so to speak, to actually becoming something you could monetize? Like, was there a specific thing, like video or moment that where you noticed, oh, this is happening?
Yeah, definitely. So I had purchased my first sailboat, which I still have, and it's just on Lake Huron here in Ontario, and lived aboard that and worked at the restaurant there for like a whole season, and then tried to make a couple of YouTube videos with my friend, and they were just god awful. Like, we had no idea what we were doing, but it was just for fun. Like, we weren't trying to make anything serious out of it, but put those out there and ended up somehow getting in contact with another YouTube channel. And so Sailing Doodles reached out to me and had seen the videos. They were looking for crew and just somebody who kind of had a bit of sailing experience and had a little bit of editing experience. And so I have always been very artistic, and I've always loved photography, always loved editing, and I've always kind of had a passion for that. And so invited to go on an 8-month sailing trip, and I said yes. And so that was kind of where it all began, and being exposed to that YouTube sailing world and kind of coming in with somebody who's already very big in the YouTube world and has a successful channel was just an amazing learning platform to be able to see how everything works, and just kind of opened up this whole new world to me that I didn't really realize was there. And then that shifted in towards me being able to start my own YouTube channel. And luckily enough, I was actually able to monetize with my first video because I had a lot of following come over from that channel, that because I left and I was kind of doing my own thing, and a lot of them wanted to just continue seeing what my adventures were and what I was doing. So very, very lucky and very blessed to have had that kind of start to this career. And I definitely feel very lucky to have had that opportunity.
What was the most surprising thing to you, like sort of getting to see behind the scenes before, you know, you have fun? I want to say, I feel like you're like the spin-off show of like another show. And you know what I mean? It's cool. But what did you find most surprising about how things operate when, you know, it's something that's being made for social media?
I think the biggest shock to me initially was just how much people recognize you when you're in a sailing area. Like, every marina we went to, they recognized Sailing Doodles channel. And I was just like, whoa, like, I had no idea all these people were this interested in this and that. Like, you'd actually get recognized walking around. And then it was kind of like, whoa, like this, you start to realize that it is going out to the whole world and it's a bigger picture thing. And so I think that was very eye-opening, just seeing kind of the reach and the exposure that is actually there.
So it seems like you do editing, but you also have like the whole boat and you've done the van life. So you have to be mechanical at the same time. So how does that factor into everything? Are you just really good at fixing things?
Well, it definitely kind of runs in the family. So my father is like mechanical genius. You know, he's been working on things his whole life, and I'm the youngest and I have two older brothers. So growing up, it was always like cars, things in the driveway, boats being fixed. They're always working on stuff. And luckily, my father is the kind of person who, it's not like just because I'm a girl, I can't do what the guys are doing. And so he was very welcoming and inviting for me to join the boys and take part in what they're doing, get my hands dirty, turn some wrenches. And so I think growing up with that kind of influence in my life and having very strong, capable mechanical men in my life to kind of show me the way has given me like a good base level. I'm definitely not a genius or like mechanical expert by any means, but growing up with that, there's definitely some base knowledge that is kind of lingering there from all of that.
So does BOAT stand for Bust Out Another Thousand?
Absolutely. That rings true, for sure.
What's been the biggest repair that you've had to face? Like, what was the most challenging thing that you've had to do so far?
So definitely the most challenging thing was repowering. So putting in a new engine. You know, my first season with the boat cruised down the east coast of the U.S. And towards the end, once I finally made it to Florida, it blew a head gasket. And so the big trouble with that, and it was such a kind of complicated situation, was being Canadian, I had spent my time in the U.S. And so I had to leave, and my boat was broken, and I physically couldn't be there for another 6 months. And so there was really no option of me doing it myself, unless I wanted to wait 6 months and then still have to do all the repairs. And then that's a lot of time off and a lot of time away from content and filming and kind of keeping the ball rolling. So it was a lot of decision making. And basically the two options were, you know, rebuild that engine, which is already a very old, not so great engine that has been tinkered into by all the previous owners, or, you know, get a new one. And so when I was weighing the options, basically my galley is completely fiberglass in all around the engine. And so even if I wanted to rebuild the old engine, they would have had to have cut out the galley, removed it, and removed the engine. They couldn't have rebuilt it in place. So at that point, with all those expenses of doing that and all that work, it's like, why wouldn't I just get a new engine? It's the right thing to do. It's going to give me the peace of mind in the future. So I'm not just going to be holding my breath and waiting for something to go wrong again. And now that I've come through that and been able to have that replaced, it was the best decision I've ever made. It gives me so much peace of mind. And sailing, you know, without that being a concern, you've got enough to worry about alone when you're sailing, and having a reliable engine that just fires up when you turn the key and doesn't give you any issues is amazing.
So when you blew this head gasket, were you like, you know, cruising along and all of a sudden you heard like an explosion and you were like, oh, what the hell could that be?
It was more of a slow and steady kind of deterioration over the course of the time that I was cruising. There were a lot of different issues, and overheating was a big one that kept happening. And there was a ton of like kind of hairy situations where I'm waiting for a bridge to open and all of a sudden the engine overheats and I have to shut it down. And there's traffic coming and I'm having to anchor in the middle of the channel and figure things out. And so that was kind of happening on a regular basis. And then finally, when I got into Florida and it had just overheated, and there were multiple different factors. Like there was a little bit of air that I kept having to bleed out, and I would do that and then it would be fine for a month or a couple of weeks and it wouldn't overheat. And then all of a sudden it would come back again. And so I always like my pre-checks kind of when I'm about to go, kind of check the fluids, check the oil, check the coolant, check all that. And so I just happened to like peek my head in there and the coolant was just totally black and filled with oil. And then you look out underneath and there's coolant and oil just leaking out of everything. And so at that point, it was like, I give up trying to like Frankenstein this thing to work and trying to like do all these little things just to get it to work for another week or another 2 weeks until it craps the bed again. And yeah, so that was kind of the final straw, finding that and realizing that like this engine is not going to be getting me anywhere.
Yeah, I'm sure your heart was like pounding looking at that.
Oh yeah, I had a little bit of a cry and just a frustration and so tired of everything going wrong, because that is definitely a theme of boat life, is it's always breaking and oh, something always has to be fixed. And it had been a lot of that, you know, your first year on a boat, you're kind of dealing with a lot of different bugs and just kind of chasing down problems and getting used to the boat and figuring things out. And so that alone, and then to have that kind of final straw of that, was like, man, I just want to give up. Like,
I always found it fascinating that shit seems to go wrong right when you need it to work the most.
110%. Yep.
So with all the work that you've done on the boat and refitting it and all of that, how, you know, what's your take on how there's so much technology and all the things that are being produced, you know, like all the new engines for the most part are like, not only do you need to know mechanical, but you also need to know technology and all of that. How does that factor into everything?
And that was a big part of the decision of what engine I was going to go with to replace it. And so originally I was very heart set on getting a brand new Yanmar. I mean, most people in the boating industry know Yanmar. It's a very good name. They're good engines. And then I was kind of steered away from that because of the new engines and everything being electronic, right? And so if you have a problem, it's hard to diagnose yourself. You need to hire a technician to come, plug in their computer and diagnose it that way. And it's very difficult to find those specific parts for those engines when you're cruising all over the world. And so in that aspect, it was like, well, I know something is going to go wrong again. And eventually something always does. And if and when it does, I want it to be simple enough for me to be able to work on it and diagnose it. And so that was where a couple of my friends who also have YouTube channels and are in the boating world steered me towards Beta Marine engines, because they're basically just a marinized Kubota tractor engine. And so they're very just simple and mechanical and straightforward. And you can pretty much get parts for them wherever you are in the world. Like, a lot of the parts are pretty universal. So you could go into an old tractor store or something and be able to find the belt that you need. And so that was kind of the biggest thing that led me towards, you know, keep it simple, stupid. Like, just don't. Sometimes with all the new technology, in certain cases, it's great to have that stuff, like autopilot and, you know, your navigation and your chart plotter and things like that. But when it comes to the mechanical side of things, I definitely say, like, keep it mechanical.
I think that's really good advice. I mean, a lot of people get caught up in, I don't know, wanting to stick with what they know or what they've known. And like you said, Yanmar is really familiar with everybody. But you know, can you get somebody to come fix that particular engine, like in the Philippines? Maybe not.
Exactly. Yeah.
So where have you taken your boat to? Tell us some of your travels.
Yeah. So this past season, once we got the new engine fixed up, did big refit, like solar arch, solar panels, batteries, chart plotter, everything. She was good to go. And so went from the US to the Bahamas to Turks and Caicos, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, BVI's, Dominica, Grenada, and then ended off in Grenada to leave the boat there for hurricane season.
Out of all those, which was your favorite and which was your least favorite? I need to know.
I would say most favorite was Dominica. It was absolutely stunning. Just like huge mountains and lush jungle and waterfall. And the people were so welcoming and kind. And it felt more remote. Like the people who were there were like the sailors and the locals. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't so much like heavy tourism and like yacht charters and things like that. It felt more like that old fashioned cruiser community where you're like really out there. And just absolutely loved that place. Can't wait to go back. But least favorite, I would probably say the British Virgin Islands, actually. Just the heavy traffic and all of the charter boats, and the anchorages aren't great. You pretty much always have to catch a mooring ball and pay for that. And so for the people who aren't chartering and for the people who are liveaboards and cruisers, it's so commercialized almost that kind of takes away from the whole reason of why we're coming here and doing this is to have that raw sailing life. And so, and also my boat drug over a reef and I broke the rudder in half there. So not too fond memories of that place.
That has nothing to do with that, you know. The rest.
Yeah. Might have tainted my view a little bit.
So in terms of cruising, right, how affordable really is it?
That's a very broad question, right? Depending mm-hmm. on what kind of cruiser you are. So I would say there's, just to oversimplify it, there's kind of two categories. And there's the real salty sailors who are anchoring everywhere, never staying in a marina, and are mostly self-sufficient, like have water makers and things like that. And then there's kind of the group who are, I'd say I fit more into this group, like a bit of both, like anchoring when we can, staying in a marina when we can, kind of a bit of a balance of both. And I'd say, you know, obviously being a real true salty sailor and wanting to kind of rough it out is obviously going to be more affordable. You know, if you're in free anchorages all the time, you're never paying for that. Basically, your costs are for fuel. And, you know, sometimes if you have to pay for water, if you don't have a water maker, and like basic necessities like food and groceries and alcohol and things like that. Like you can keep it on a very tight budget if you're roughing it, which gets very tiring. And I don't think long term that is very sustainable. And then on the other hand, if you're kind of doing a bit of both, like anchoring when you can, trying to save money when you can, and then also, you know what, spending a little bit of money on a marina when you need it and you just want to plug into shore power and have a safe place to be, or if there's not great anchorages or anything, instead of suffering out there in a really rolly anchorage and being miserable, you know, you spend a bit of money, get into a marina, and you're happy. And so I think the two ways of doing it, you can be very, very affordable, but mostly the thing that crosses over into both of those categories that is the biggest expense is everything breaking all the time. So just repairs and parts and tools and dealing with all of the things that break gets very, very expensive. And so if you've got a good boat and you want to rough it and you're fixing stuff yourself, great. Again, more affordable. If you're in the category where, you know, maybe you're hiring people to fix things for you, or you're not capable, or you're just not interested in doing it, you want a professional to do it, things like that, when things go wrong, that's where it kind of makes those two groups very different. And because that expense of then paying for somebody to help and do those things really kind of makes it very expensive.
Yeah, those service providers can really jack you up.
Mm-hmm.
So before we get into kind of how you manage to like balance social media, I got to ask you, what's better, the journey or the destination?
Oh, good question. I don't think I can pick one. I think both for different reasons. Like the journey more for the adrenaline and that kind of crossing into new territory and that feeling that it gives you that kind of fills you up with excitement is, for me, is the journey. And then the destination is more like the calm and the relax and the enjoyment of actually being there. And so I think equally, both are very enjoyable. I don't think I could pick one or the other.
That's allowed.
I say both, the journey and the destination.
It sounds like it's like the calm after the storm rather than
exactly.
The storm. It's like you've been through the storm and now it's time to enjoy.
Yep.
So Meryl, do you want to move on to, or I'd like to move on to the
yes.
social media.
You got this, Allie.
We both have it, hopefully. But yeah, so the first things that came to mind after watching a bunch of your videos and checking out your Instagram, which I'm like so impressed with, what a following. I mean,
thank you.
Yeah, of course. Are you still like, oh my gosh? Or does it kind of feel like, this is life now?
Totally. No, it's weird to me all the time, like especially when I come back home and I'm in this small town that I grew up in. And it's like, you know, my following is 3 times the population of this entire town. And like when you put it into that perspective, it's like so weird. But the funny thing, you know, with the social media thing is there's such a disconnect and it almost doesn't feel real because you can see that number on a screen. And I guess in some way, easier to process, or like it doesn't really feel real. But then if you were to picture all of those people in, say, like an auditorium or something, and all of those people in one space, then it's like, whoa. And so that's where, I mean, most of the year, I'm pretty isolated, and I'm just kind of living my life and filming it. And it's not like I'm doing it for a crowd or anything like that. And I don't really see the followers side of things as much. And then that's where it comes into like things like the Annapolis Boat Show, where I went to that last year and I'll be going to it again this year. It's like shell shocking because you're actually getting to face to face meet the people who are following you and actually get that physical view of the people that support you. And that it still blows my mind. Like, I can't believe that people even want to support me at all.
Yeah, I was just at the Newport Boat Show. And they had a booth there for YouTube stars. Mm-hmm. And it's like I walk over and everyone's like, let me take a photo with all, you know, and it was pretty wild. There were a few pirate looking dudes. There were a few mm-hmm. of the old salty, you know, shipwrights. Yeah, it was a pretty wild time. And then talking to them, I was just like, man, you guys are all just liveaboards, right?
Yeah. And that's the funny thing, you know, it's like we're all just people at the end of the day. And then it's funny to have kind of like a situation like the boat show, I'd say like your 15 seconds of fame where it's like all these people wanting to take pictures with you and all of a sudden you feel like an F-list celebrity or something. And then once that's gone, you go back to totally just living your life and doing your thing and not having that exposure. So it's definitely weird mentally. And I don't even think I've fully grasped it yet.
Mm. Yeah, that sounds like a lot to process. I mean, I feel like as a liveaboard or as a cruiser, sailor, whatever, 99% of the time you're alone or just with other people who are doing the same exact thing as you, right? So
exactly.
Like, you meet people who are like, oh my God, you're like, this is very, very different.
It definitely blew me away of how many YouTube stars there actually are. And each one has their own like unique niche, right? So what is yours?
I would say mine is kind of the young female aspect. And so when I first got into the sailing world, the majority of everybody that I met and sailing around and all the cruisers that I met were of a certain age group that was not mine. And so I really started to like notice that all the time. And so I think potentially that's kind of the avenue of my channel that people find interesting is that I am a young person and I am a young woman and I've worked hard to kind of make this happen for myself. And a lot of the channels are couples and things like that. And I've recently got into a relationship myself, but kind of where it started from was like just this young woman trying to take on the world and like do what she wants to do. And I would like to hope that that is inspiring to people.
Have you seen more women come into sailing since you started?
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's been a huge influx. I think honestly, because of COVID, a lot of people are able to work remotely now. And so I've noticed even just in the last 2 years that there's been a huge influx of younger age cruisers out there. And this past season, actually buddy boating with some other young cruisers and meeting up with so many of them, it really opened up my eyes to like how many people there are like us doing this right now, a lot more than there was, you know, a few years ago. And so that's really, really great to see, like seeing younger people kind of taking on this thing that is very much people see it as like a retirement thing. And so to see young people like taking that on and going out and doing it is amazing. And seeing more women feeling capable enough to do that as well is just amazing.
So when you are planning your travels, right, because you have like season 1, 2, 3. So how does your success as a YouTuber affect, you know, what you do and what you decide to, like, where you decide to travel and whatnot?
I think, honestly, like, because it's Taylor's Travels, and although I am, like, predominantly a sailing channel, I have a few other avenues of traveling, like the motorcycle and the camper van and things, that my channel is a bit more broad. So I'm, most of the time, I'm just flying by the seat of my pants, and wherever I'm going is where I'm going. And wherever, you know, like, the plan is to go to the boat show, okay, I'm going to go to the boat show, and then I'm going to go back to the boat or whatever. And so very much loosely planned. I don't have anything structured. I don't have anything organized. And that's kind of the beauty, actually, of, I guess, the success from my YouTube channel, is it has allowed me to have more freedom in that, and has allowed me to continue flying by the seat of my pants and just trying to figure it out as I go.
Do you have a team working with you, like, making, like, editing these videos and producing all of it? Just you?
Just me.
And how demanding of a job is that?
It's very demanding. In the last season, when I was sailing, and it was my first season really sailing my boat, you know, through the Caribbean and doing these bigger sails with the new engine and all of this new stuff, it just consumed all of my time, the boat, and then also continuing to film. So if we want to go out and go spearfishing or, like, do something fun that we can film, then we're out filming that. And then, you know, come back after an exhausting day, the last thing I want to do is edit. Like, I just want to go to sleep. And then the next day we have to sail. And then anytime I'm sailing or anytime I'm offshore or anything like that, I'm a write-off. Like, I cannot look at a laptop screen if I'm on the boat underway and we're sailing, nor do I have the time. Like, I'm too busy sailing the boat to be able to work. And so this past season, I definitely struggled a lot to keep up the content because I was just in over my head with everything that was going on in the moment, sailing and just keeping things going. And now that I'm back and having a little bit of a break on land, I've been able to really focus and crush some videos and get them out. But it's definitely a very difficult juggling act, cruising and trying to edit videos, trying to keep up with other social media like Instagram and all these things. And, you know, really, it's the job of, like, five people. Like, having a social media manager, being a photographer or videographer, and being an editor. And so it's very much tasking and demanding. And I am guilty of having pretty poor time management skills. So yeah, it's a challenge. But at the same time, I absolutely love it. So it's not like, oh, I have to go to work, or oh, I have to do this thing, and it's, like, so terrible. Like, I actually love editing. I really enjoy doing it, and it makes me so happy to make these videos. It's just the time balancing act definitely gets very difficult sometimes.
Yeah, when I was talking to all the influencers, I was like, how big's your team? I asked, like, each one of them, and, you know, they're all like, oh yeah, it's kind of just me, and I have to work, like, 18 hours a day doing it. And I was like, whoa, that sounds pretty intense. We luck out with the podcast. We got a good group of people, so.
That's awesome.
So what's the process? Well, I guess I feel like it's so hard to be, like, good with recording video. You know, like, how do you manage to stay on top of it? I feel like it can drag out, like, you know.
Yeah, I've definitely been through, like, a few kind of creative slumps before, definitely with filming, but I mean, luckily, with my background and having always really had an interest and passion for photography and videography and things like that, I guess kind of comes natural to me. But the difficult thing with the sailing content is keeping it fresh. And because at the end of the day, it's all kind of the same thing. You're sailing from place to place. Like, there's only so much sailing footage that you can do. And so finding new ways of capturing that is really fun. Like, you know, 360 cameras, or, you know, doing different angles and really doing that has been something that I've had a lot of fun with, just trying to do things differently than I normally would, you know. And because it's very easy to get stale and to just kind of, like, pan the camera around and, like, here's the sailing. And so, yeah, just getting really creative with, like, different cameras, different camera angles, and experimenting around with that kind of keeps it fresh and, like, not so stale. But I've definitely been through some creative slumps, and, like, especially when I'm having a hard time sailing, and if things are going wrong and the weather's crap, and there's times where I'm just like, I'm not even going to bother picking up the camera today. And you know what? That's okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, there are tons of times where it's like you're in bad weather and people are like, I want to see you in bad weather. And it's like, I can't pick up the camera in bad weather because I'm too busy making sure that I stay alive. So sorry.
Exactly. The amount of like amazing content I haven't filmed is just through the roof.
I know. Doesn't that even kill you?
It does. It really, I know. And then after the fact, you're like, damn it, I should have filmed that. And it's just a regret.
I think this is a good segue into what we brought up before about social media and your personal life and what to share, what not to share, where you draw the line. I have a million questions, but maybe you can just start off with what your experience has been like.
Yeah, I think especially, again, being from a small town and not really, I didn't necessarily like push myself to be in the social media world. Like it very much happened organically and I took that chance and I ran with it. But, you know, by no means am I like a social media person. Like I actually joke around with my friends all the time that I'm like the worst social media YouTuber ever because I can't even keep up with like the trends and TikToks and, you know, things like that. And so coming from that kind of, I guess, inexperience with the whole YouTube thing and then being thrown full blown into it, it was definitely difficult to find that line of, okay, so now I'm just filming my life and I kind of just film everything I do. And, you know, most people go home from work and they're done their day and they're not thinking about work and they just hang out with their family. And for me, like, it's a very weird thing having yourself as a business. And because you can't really turn it off. You're always thinking about it. If I'm not filming something, I'm feeling guilty for not filming something. If I'm editing, then I'm thinking about all the other things I have to do. And so you never really shut it off. And so that's where I've come into more of the routine of, you know, when I'm sailing and I'm on my boat and I'm, or in my van and I'm doing my adventures, I'm all about filming that. But when I come back from hurricane season and I'm at home with my family, I don't film anything. Like I want to keep that, this place kind of sacred, you know, for me and my family. And, you know, not everybody wants to be on YouTube or wants to be in the social media world. So like some of my very close friends and my family, like I almost want to protect them from that. And I almost don't want them to be a part of that. And so, and that's really nice for me to just put the camera down, not worry about things, be myself with the people that I love. And that is very refreshing and kind of gives me the motivation to get back to it. Like when I'm back at the boat after having that time to just relax and be myself with my friends and my family, I feel rejuvenated and motivated again to then continue filming and sharing. Like it helps ease that burnout of feeling like you're sharing everything and not having that balance. It kind of gives a little bit more balance to that, I think.
One time was talking to one of like the higher ups of Boeing. And I'm like, you know, how do you take care of all these planes? And he was like, well, the secret is to go to almost the point of failure and then replace it. And I mean, it's very much similar to burnout, right? It's like, if you go to the point where you're burned out, you're so screwed, right? And it's like knowing when you're starting to feel that and when it's come too far that you're like, okay, I got to pause. And it's okay to do that, right? Because, you know, you got to continue to be like putting out stuff. It's your business. So
absolutely. Yeah.
I was going to say, you're not just balancing yourself, right? If you're in the same relationship that I saw recently, and I'm very happy for you.
Anyway. Thank you.
One, I enjoyed watching that. I saw in one thing, one YouTube video, he said like, you know, I never thought, I was completely against it. And I never thought I'd be in it at all. And my husband is like the same way. I can't, you know, like you will never see him anywhere ever. So I feel like you're lucky in a way that at least, you know, your boyfriend was like, well, I have to.
Yeah, definitely very lucky. And like, that was again, like, back to that whole like where do you draw the line thing, and I shared a little bit about this in that video, but just, you know, navigating a new relationship, like for anybody, aside from like completely take the YouTube social media thing out of the equation, having just a new relationship that you're trying to balance is very difficult. And not difficult. It's new, you're figuring things out, you're having fun. And so then adding like that YouTube into the mix is definitely a little awkward.
That's difficult, I feel like, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, but you know what? He has been amazing and has actually helped me so much with filming things and has really opened up to the idea of it all. And he has been amazing. Like, he has helped me film so many things, and now he's even maybe inspired to start his own little YouTube thing. Like, he's changed. He's doing very well. Yeah, I feel very, very lucky to have been blessed with a partner who's willing to work with me on this. And he wholeheartedly supports me through everything. And he's like my biggest fan. And so it's really special to have that and to have kind of gotten to this point now where, you know, we're comfortable in the relationship. And now sharing that isn't so much of an awkward line to cross.
So you're only 23. And, you know, most people at 23 have like absolutely no direction. I mean, I feel like I was there once. So it's like, what are some, like, you have any like big goals that you want to do over the next few years? Or like, you know, what's the future hold?
That's a good question. Honestly, again, like, I'm such a live in the moment person that I really struggle with looking at the future. And it's not until the opportunities are right in front of my face that I even have any idea what I'm doing. But as far as goals, I don't necessarily have any like huge sailing goals. Like, I would love to cross an ocean at some point, but I don't want to do it on my boat. And I don't want to be the captain. Like, for an ocean crossing, for a first experience like that, I think I would really learn more and gain more confidence and just have more of a great experience if I were crew for an ocean crossing. So potentially doing something like that would be probably a big goal. Like, every sailor always wants to like have that under their belt. And so that's definitely something that I would love to do at some point. But again, my boat just ain't the boat for it. And I also, like, as much as I have confidence in myself, and I mean, I know that the boat could do it and I know that I could do it, but it's the matter of like stress, time, money, aggravation, and all of that. And so, you know, if I could do it on somebody else's boat and get the best of the experiences and learn a lot, then I think I would be more capable and set up for doing that again, being the captain of my own boat. Just kind of, I like to like get experience doing things first. And, you know, I'm, as much as I have confidence sailing and I've done a lot of this, I still, like, I guess, know my limitations. And I always err on the side of caution. And I'm always like more safety and like practical and realism rather than like, as adventurous as I am, I'm not pure adventure. Like, yeah, I'm going to go do it. I don't care if I'm out there for 30 days and the boat gets smashed to smithereens. I'm going to do it. Like, I definitely have a more conservative view on that. But yeah, other big goals, I really don't know. I'm always kind of wherever the wind takes me.
So when we talk about like maritime and boating, I mean, it is pretty expansive in what that covers. It goes from like oil rigs to aquaculture to sailing to all these different facets. And not a lot of people really communicate between the different like kind of segments of it. And they all have their unique perspective on kind of like the ocean or like boating. Could you talk a little bit about what your like view of maritime is, or maybe like the state of the oceans or stuff like that?
Yeah, definitely. I think no matter what, I guess, genre of the maritime world that you're in, I think the one thing that all of us kind of share is that the ocean is extremely humbling, and you can't have a big ego and go out there because Mother Nature is going to check you pretty quick. And so I think everybody who is involved in working with the ocean has that deep respect that we all share. And that kind of knowing that the ocean is a force, and many times it's a force like not to be reckoned with. And it's extremely powerful and extremely dangerous. And you go through, you know, sometimes hell and back with the experiences that you have just trying to live on the ocean. And so I think that's why there's like such a good camaraderie between, you know, whether you're a sailor or, you know, working on a tanker, you can all kind of have that similar camaraderie of how difficult it can be and how dangerous it can be, but also how beautiful and how amazing it can be. And as far as the state of the oceans and the way things are environmentally, I would say, is I've noticed in certain areas more than others that I've sailed to, just the obviously like plastic and pollution. And for the most part, offshore and like sailing not near land, I personally haven't really experienced that much like trash, like seeing it in the water, like maybe very, very few occurrences of that. But then when you're sailing into areas that are closer to land that have bays and harbors and lagoons, like the trash and the pollution in the water is very bad in some areas. And it's very sad to see. And especially as a person who's coming into these countries who isn't from these countries, it's kind of like, I guess it's easy to be judgmental and be like, why aren't you guys doing anything about this? Or like, why are you just littering trash into the water? And, you know, for some areas, it's just like they don't know any different and they've grown up that way and they don't necessarily like know that that's a bad thing. And so as far as the state of the oceans and that, I think everybody really has a lot to learn and a lot to kind of process in what we can do to counteract some of the negative things that are happening. And a lot of it just comes down to education and helping people to understand what the ocean does for us and what the ocean gives us and how we can kind of give back to that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I like to think, and I tell people all the time that if you kind of look at the ocean, like nations have been built off it and, you know, all of that, but we're very much at the beginning of the beginning, right? Not a lot of people know about the ocean that much, but it's becoming more and more aware. And that's what a lot of these like channels are doing and, you know, creating awareness. And it's that will ultimately kind of change how society sees it. But another
Absolutely.
Point that you were getting at, right, about just how humbling the ocean is. There's a quote where it's like, there's nothing more enticing, disenchanting, and enslaving than a life at sea.
That is accurate. That is very, very accurate. I like that quote.
Well, as we wrap this up, what type of tips and advice would you give a younger person that's thinking about, like, you know, living this alternative lifestyle, exploring, all of that?
Yeah, I'd say tip number one would be just to get yourself out there and, you know, insert yourself into the sailing world. And that doesn't necessarily mean going out and buying a boat. You know, that can be taking sailing courses at your local, you know, wherever's local to you, or hopping aboard a friend's boat, or, you know, there's things like Crew Seeker and things like that too, where you can go and crew on other people's boat. Because I think honestly, the best way to learn and to get into it is by being crew. You know, you can't just jump on and say, I'm the captain now. So if you're a younger person wanting to get into it and don't really know how to kind of bridge that gap of how do I kind of jump in head first, just put yourself out there and gain experience, however that might be, whether it's sailing a little Hobie cat around the lake or something. Just gain experience, get yourself out there, gain more knowledge of it. Another tip is watching YouTubers. Like, as silly as that sounds, before I even started YouTubing and when I was going to buy my first boat at 19 years old, I was watching all the YouTube channels. And you know what? I actually learned a lot. And I saw a lot from the realities, like the things that they were working on and everything they were doing. It was really eye-opening and it's inspiring. Like, you want to keep the inspiration going. You want to be excited about it. And so honestly, watching YouTubers kind of gives you that motivation and helps you learn something along the way, and it's fun. And then I'd say the last tip, be, especially for women, don't be afraid of the things that you don't know. Because this is what I always say, like, I find a big thing that is preventing, I'd say, some women from really wanting to pursue the sailing on their own is the mechanical side of things. And so, you know, a lot of women don't necessarily feel comfortable or capable tackling that. And so they're like, well, you know, maybe if I get a boyfriend someday, I can do it, or maybe whatever. And so, you know, at the end of the day, with my brothers and even my boyfriend and being on the boat around men who are mechanical, when they don't know something, they Google it, you know, end of the day, that's what happens. And there's nothing about mechanics that men are necessarily better at it than women, or that women can't understand it. And obviously there's some physical things, like sometimes I can't like pull an injector because I don't have the physical strength, but you know, there's really nothing to be scared of or intimidated of with that mechanical side of things, and or even just anything that you don't feel like you know, because you just learn. And there's nothing that says that a woman can't learn that and can't do that. It's just a matter of how much you want and how interested you are. And so, yeah, just don't be afraid of the things you don't know. Don't be afraid to learn. Don't stop yourself from learning because you're going through all the what ifs in your head.
I love that. I think that's really well said, really eloquently put. I've run into a lot of women who have sort of hit these hurdles of like, I just can't do it. And it's like, why can't you do it? And it's, they were just scared, really. And I mean, electronics scares me a little bit. Like, I don't like dealing with AC power, right?
I feel you. Yeah.
but it's doable. Everyone can, you know, it's sometimes it's a matter of strength, but there are men that can't pull that thing out either, right?
Exactly. Totally.
Well, yeah. Any repair on my boat, I have like a panic attack and I'm like, oh my God. And I have this like thing where if I don't know it, I'm just like terrified of it.
Totally. I mean, I'm the same way, right? And that's the thing, just normalizing that like, it's okay to be afraid and it's okay to not know something. Like in the YouTube, especially with like a lot of the commenters and stuff, there's a lot of armchair sailors who love to tell you exactly what you're doing wrong and all those things. And it's like, you know what? There's nothing wrong with not knowing, because that's how you figure it out. Like at the end of the day, that not knowing is what gets you to becoming more experienced and being confident, because eventually you're going to have to figure it out, right? Like there's no reason to like stigmatize that or be afraid of that or think that it's like bad that somebody doesn't know how to use a voltmeter. Like it's okay.
Right.
Well, Taylor, I thought those were very eloquent tips, and it was great have the opportunity to talk to you and hear your story and all of that.
Yeah, you guys as well. Thank you so much for having. It's been a pleasure.
Check back every Tuesday for our latest episode and be sure to like, share and subscribe to ShipShape.pro.